Other People's Lives is my guest Ray Davies' first solo album after leading the Kinks since 1963. It's also his first album to deal thematically almost exclusively with America. One of the things we learned today is how Ray's obsession with England was at least partially the result of the Kinks being banned from touring the States in the mid-60s and having to stay at home in England. During the making of this album, Ray was living in New Orleans and was actually shot in the leg while coming to the aid of someone who was being mugged. We'll talk about how that experience affected his writing. But first off, I wanted to know, why go solo now?
Like all stubborn, I guess, people, I wanted to write something different and not go for the same old, sounds. So I went through about four or five rhythm sections. I did demos with different people. I even got Mick Avery, the original Kinks drummer, to audition.
That's funny.
He failed the audition, but he took it well. He didn't even pass the audition for the Kinks, actually. I might mention that.
What happened then?
It's straying from the subject, but he played with the band. He came to the first audition when we started out, Before You Really Got Me was a hit, and I didn't actually say he had the gig, but he got into the band, made albums with us for 20 years. And then he had a falling out with my brother, Dave. And Dave said, you've got to fire him. I said, well, A, I don't think he should go. And B, why don't you fire him? So, and I ended up doing it. And I took him to a pub in the countryside in England. We had a few drinks. I think he knew what was on the cards. The story is a bit like one of those horrible hit scenes in The Sopranos or something. You take somebody out for dinner, then you blow them away. But I took Mick out for a few drinks. I remember I couldn't drive at the time. We went on bicycles, two drunk sort of middle-aged guys on bicycles cycling through the Surrey countryside to various pubs. And just before closing time in the last pub, I said, you came to that audition, Mick, 20 years ago. He said, yeah. I said, well, you never got the gig. It didn't work out. And he knew what I was talking about. It was just a horrible thing to go through because, he said at the time that even if it didn't come to this, he'd had enough of touring at that point. This was in the mid-80s, and he wanted to just not tour for a few years anyway, so it was welcome news. But it was horrible. It took more out of me than it did Mick. I saw Mick last week, and, we're still the best friends, and I never thought a drummer would be one of my best friends, but he is.
Well, back to the current rhythm section. And you finally settled on some people who made most of the record?
No. I'm still looking for Al Jackson and Steve Cropper sounding people. When I've got a song, I hear it as a record. I think of all the songs that, things like You Really Got Me, things like Waterloo Sunset, that wasn't a big hit here, but it was everywhere else. And even Sunny Afternoon, I heard it as a record when I wrote the song. So I've had this sound in my head for drummers. It started off as a very English record because all my demos I inherited were about Englishness. And I wanted to get away from that. And when I'd made the demos, I realised there's got to be music from elsewhere. And that's when I came over to the States and to the United States and started writing songs here. I did a trip here. I played Storyteller for the last time in America in 2001, just after 9/11. And that was a pretty horrendous tour because of all the events that went on before that. And it made me realize that there's so much of America I still want to discover, musically as well as, culturally. And because it was post 9/11, we had to travel by road a lot. We couldn't rely on the flights, and we travelled to places that normally we'd hop on a plane. We drove from New York to Cleveland. Normally it's a flight. So I saw bits of America I think that I'd missed before, and I started writing a whole new batch of songs on that trip. And eventually, I'd already been to New Orleans. Just beginning of 2000, the year 2000, ended up going down there again to write more songs.
You actually ended up living there, and you're not the first musical artist to kind of fall in love with that city from elsewhere, I should say. What was it particularly for you that made that a place you wanted to make home for a while?
I said to a journalist down there, I don't think there's any musical snobbery down there. It may sound strange, someone like me saying that, but I am still, I'm still learning my craft as a musician, and I'm still. People may find this difficult to believe, but I actually get very insecure about new work. But there, I felt that there was more openness when it came to music. Nobody expected me to be a, you know, play like Jeff Beck, or you know, I felt comfortable in a musical environment more than anywhere else. Certainly more than London, and also culturally down there is. Because America is, for the most part, middle class, I think. Well, the aspirations are, you know, people have their cars and the ideal American culture that grew up through the 50s and post-Second World War is middle class, what the English would call middle class. And I was drawn by the kind of, not the poor people, but the more blue-collar approach to things. And I can't pinpoint any part of the community. I'm not a great sociologist or anything, but just I'm an instinctive, intuitive person, and I liked the way it felt there. It made me rediscover why I picked up a guitar in the first place.
The other thing, Ray, we should talk a little bit about, talking about this new album. It's Other People's Lives, which, if you look at it from the outside, it's you've always been an observer. You've spent a long time observing British culture, and certainly some satirizing things and some praising things. How does it differ looking at American culture? As I assume a lot of these songs now, at least the new ones, are that way.
Well, I spent so much time touring in America, but it's the ironic thing about it is that I think we were obsessed by America because we were banned from America for playing in the mid-60s. We were banned by a group of musicians, union groups that banned the Kinks for 3.5 years, and this is at a time when we were having lots of success all over the world. So we missed what they call the Woodstock era, because we weren't allowed to come. So when we came back eventually, at the beginning of the 70s, we found ourselves playing college dates, small clubs, really building ourselves. We were a cult band. People knew about our hits, but we had no real following because there was no MTV. There's no way the world could keep up with what we looked like and how we sounded without getting radio play, which was difficult even then, without being on tour or on television. Other People's Lives itself is, and the song itself came about because it's one of these English demos that I had in the mid 90s, and I just liked the chords a real lot. And I could play them and I could remember them, and the English tabloids, I don't know if you have many tabloids here, but the English culture is very in your face. It's a very intrusive culture, tabloid culture. And I thought of this idea to make a story up, if it were a story about two people who meet in Spain, and she comes back to live with him, and because of Hello magazine, am I allowed to say that? Hello magazine really started the tabloid culture, which is really all over the world now. And I wanted to write a song about that. And I really wanted to use the word vomited on a track.
Yeah, let's listen to it. This is Other People's Lives.
On the internet, now the tabloids have the news. Cross my heart, it just ain't true. I never thought it of you. Name names and every line is feeding their suspicious minds. I'm not bitter or angry, I'm only feeling sympathy. Found the time to feed the reporter with your view. See the reporter break the news. Read the reporter, join the queue. Spread the news, scandalize. Words thousand knives. Take the cash, back the prize for playing games with other people's lives.
That's the title track to Ray Davis's new album called Other People's Lives. And you know, we're talking about sort of the span of time that a lot of this writing took place in, and people listen to songs. I was thinking particularly of After the Fall, and assume that it is about your being shot. Assumes it's about the problems of New Orleans. But I understand that that song actually came from a while ago.
Yeah, the worrying thing. I was attacked and shot in New Orleans at the beginning of 2004. And a long recovery process. The injuries were more severe than people realised. So I stayed on a long time. But actually, all the tracks for this album had been recorded and all the songs written. So nothing on the record has come from that experience of being injured down there. But the worrying thing is that there's a lot of... It's almost anticipating the songs, like After the Fall, take on a new meaning. And all the lyrics were written, but lying in bed in hospital down there, all those songs went through my head over and over again. Songs like The Tourist, about somebody out there having a good time, you know, in an impoverished community, and then they get robbed. And so it could have been written after the event, but it most definitely wasn't. And it made the process of mixing the album quite difficult for me, confronting the songs again after the accident. So it's... It took me on quite an emotional journey.
Yeah.
It's almost as if the songs said, these are good songs, okay, Ray, we like them. What's it going to be? What's going to happen because of these songs? And I went down there and this happened, and almost by perfect casting, it happened.
You have to watch what you write.
It's all, blame it on the music. Don't blame the parents.
Let's listen to, actually, either one of those would be great, but let's play After the Fall. After the Fall from Other People's Lives. And we're talking with Ray Davis about his first solo album and about these songs that were recorded before any of the events. The place you actually lived in New Orleans got flooded?
Well, I spoke to the people I stayed with. They really kind people, Bob and Jean down there. I phoned him up on his mobile a few days after, and they'd already got out. They got out early. They went to... where did they go? Baton Rouge. So they got out safely. And I'm picking up things. The doctors that treated me, I got a nice email from one of the doctors down there. It was, I wrote a piece in the English newspapers to say I was concerned about some of the people I knew down there. And they're gradually coming back, you know, like the city itself. It's gradually coming back to normality, if that will ever be the case again, whatever normal is. I just hope that the community rebuilds itself.
One of the first songs we had a chance to hear from Other People's Lives came out last year, the Thanksgiving Day song, which kind of became an anthem around many places right around Thanksgiving, and had me scratching my head a little bit because Thanksgiving seems like a purely American thing. And what was the inspiration for writing that?
I I'd been to Thanksgiving dinners on tours. We often wondered why there were no dates at the end of November in the itinerary. They said, oh, we can't work on Thanksgiving. Nobody goes to concerts. So I ended up going to friends' houses at Thanksgiving. And one particular Thanksgiving, 1999, I went to see some friends in New England. And later on, when I was down in New Orleans, I went to several Thanksgiving dinners there. And it is a special thing. I know perhaps Americans, you know, the people I talk to, I say, oh, I've written a song called Thanksgiving Day, and they roll their eyes up and they say, why are you writing a song about that? I say, well, it seems to me, and this is just my take on it, that it's a very special event, and as much as people are bored by going home, it's a time, I think, when it's a real family event. That's the feeling I get from it. And it's a time of unity, and that's not such a bad thing to do that once a year. So I kind of admired it and wished perhaps Britain should pick up on that and we should have a day of unity. So the song is about the tension of this older person, senior citizen type character, waiting for the kids to come home, who's going to make it. And in the song, there's a son who's broken up, his relationship is broken up with his marriage has fallen apart, and he's waiting at a truck stop, wondering whether he should go back or not. And at the end of the song, of course, they all come down the driveway and they arrive. That's my own fantasy world doing that. But it is a lot. It strikes me that it's a great time to celebrate. It's so uncool for a rock musician writer to talk this way, and certainly to write a song about a senior citizen, no better. But hey, why not? It's to me, it's a special event, and it's probably the uncoolest song I've ever written.
Are you going on Thanksgiving Day to those family celebrations, passing our knowledge down through the years at the gathering of generations? Wife was still by side. She would always cook dinner on Thanksgiving Day. It's all over. It's all over. It's all over the American way.
Thanksgiving Day from Ray Davis, and that's one that was out on an EP, but is also out now on Other People's Lives. Ray's first solo album. You know, it's interesting hearing you talk about how you think that song is kind of uncool, but Ray, you've actually, you know, if you look at it that way, a lot of your view of England, I think some people might consider have been uncool at the time of some of the things were written. I mean, you were very Village Green, I'm thinking about some of the other real kind of vignettes about England. Have been very nostalgic and very very warm. In fact, I bet you've really skewed my view of what England is like, unless you end up in the Cotswolds or something. Did you? I mean, you seem to like to romanticize British life when you were writing about that.
I don't think it's romanticizing so much. It's actually there are pockets of England that do exist that way, and it's what they call Middle England. Mm-hmm. Not so much the Cotswolds, more like the home counties, more like Kent, Surrey, places just outside London, not really rural, and that still exists. And that's last year I had a visit from Prince Charles. That's Middle England for you. It's caring about the environment, caring about it's the small shops, little shops. But the interesting thing about the Village Green Preservation Society is that it was written during this ban when we were not allowed to come to America. And I never thought I'd be here, come to this country again. So I immersed myself in Englishness, and I thought I'll write these songs. Doesn't matter if they'll be successful or not, if they're uncool. You know, I wrote songs, a song called "The Phenomenal Cat." You know, what's that all about? But like I say, I was immersed in this Englishness that was very twee, possibly on the worst viewpoint, but actually very honest about the way I felt about England, and not written by what I was, a 22, 23-year-old. You know, that's the thing. I should have written it now, when I'm sort of more advanced in years. And that's another thing about, particularly my songs, not the Kinks rendition, is I was always writing for an older person's approval in many respects. You know, I wasn't really a rebelling teenager. I guess You Really Got Me, All Day and All the Night, they were rebellious songs. There have been a few others, many others, but for the most part, I wanted songs that could be sung at family parties, you know.
Well, as that 22 or 23-year-old, why do you think you were writing as sort of an older person at that time?
I don't know. I don't know. I think I was expected. I was the first boy in a family of girls, looking at this on a real Freudian level. And I was a really good sportsman, and I was expected to become a professional footballer. And I had a really horrific accident that broke my back, and it took me long time to recover, and I think father's disappointment at not having a sports star, and I think in a strange way it's to get approval, possibly. That's all. And also, a family sing-song is a great place. I advise Clive Davis to do this next time. Play it to your family rather than send it to all these digital companies. It's a great place. A family get-together is a great place to check out new songs and test new things. So it was an experimentation, but also to get approval, I think.
Now, I understand that you've been teaching your brother, helping him get his guitar playing in shape since his stroke.
Well, he was really sick last year. It was a bad year because I got shot in January and he had this attack. He's so mean, though, because he had the stroke on my birthday and had to abandon my plans for that day. So I couldn't really have a party knowing he was struggling for his life in hospital, although I did think about it. But I had to abandon that. And you know, we've had good conversations since, and I like to think something good comes out of everything. And obviously he's had to do a lot of soul searching because he is Dave the Rave. He's just like unstoppable energy, party guy, and, you know, living life, you know, to the 150%. And I think it's... I think he'll look back on this because he's getting better as a real watershed, obviously, in his life. And when he comes back to play again properly, he's going to be better.
Well, you yourself have mended quite well from your long, convalescence. From everything I've heard of reports of the British shows... You're really, really enjoying being back on stage. Is that accurate?
It's odd. It's odd to be on stage sometimes with new material. And I still play some of the old Kinks songs, and I always will, because, as I say in the concerts, it's part of me as a person. And I wouldn't play a song I wasn't proud of. And I'm amazed to think, you know, songs like Tired of Waiting and You Really Got Me, All Day and All of the Night. I still can't believe I've written that. And I play the songs with as much relish as I did when I first put them out. So they're very close to me, still very current and part of me.
Ray, thank you so much for spending some time with us.
Absolute pleasure. It's really good. Thank you.
And thanks for other people's lives. Ray Davies, yeah, our guest here on the World Cafe.
Our thanks again to Ray Davies, our guest, and that a new album, Other People's Lives, is available at our World Cafe CD store at our website at worldcafe.npr.org.